episode of Papa Bear Hikes. Very excited to introduce today's guest. We have with us a professional hiker, speaker, and outdoor writer, who from 2011 to 2015 held the women's self-supported speed record for the Appalachian Trail. Called a thru-hiker legend by Outside Magazine, she has hiked 20-plus long-distance trails, including the Triple Crown. And for you, those of you who may not be familiar with the Triple Crown, that's the Appalachian Trail, the Pacific Crest Trail, and the Continental Divide Trail. Her innovative urban hiking has led The Guardian to call her the Queen of Urban Hiking. A former staff writer for the New York Times, Wirecutter, and current editor-in-chief for the Outdoor Gear Review website, Tree Review, as well as a contributing editor and columnist for Backpacker Magazine with their feature of Ask the Thru-Hiker. In 2017, she was awarded the best instructional book, her book, Long Trails, Mastering the Art of Thru-Hiking. She received an award for best instructional book, and they said that it was destined to become the Bible of the sport. Liz Snorkel Thomas, welcome to Papa
Bear. Thanks so much for having me on, Papa Bear.
So yeah, this is exciting, and it's quite a bio you have. I'm familiar with your writing. I've read a lot of your articles, and I've been a subscriber to Backpacker Magazine for years. But your accomplishments are far beyond what I initially thought they were. So why don't we start by you telling us a little bit about yourself?
I love two things, and actually three things. I love hiking. And I love hiking in all sorts of places, from the wilderness to the front country to the city. And I love writing about it and sharing my experience of being outdoors, hoping to inspire folks to go out there and take their first step, whether it's the first step going out into onto a trail or a park, or that first step exploring urban hiking. I really just want to get people moving.
And Liz, that's part of what excited me about this, because you're not a one-act show here. It's not just about going out and thru-hiking these long-distance trails, but about getting people outside. And a big part of our mission here on Papa Bear Hikes is getting people outside to do something. And when I see that you're in this urban hiking that you're involved in, that's what we're doing. We're kind of telling people there's a way for all of us to get out there and do this. We don't need to go out 6 months on the Appalachian Trail or hike through the wilderness. That right in our backyards, if we live in an urban area,
yeah, for sure. You know, if we live in an urban area, I think moving is so important. And, you know, this last year, especially like getting out of your house, looking at some trees and flowers has proved to be so helpful for everyone getting out of a funk. So I think just getting our bodies moving is something that's so important, no matter the distance.
Yes. I agree. I think from every age, and as we get older, I think it becomes even more important
for
to
sure.
keep ourselves moving. So before we go any further, I introduce you as Liz Snorkel Thomas. And for our listeners, Snorkel is your trail name. And trail name is a name you're given while hiking on a long distance trail or you take on yourself. How did Snorkel come about?
Well, you know, like a lot of trail names, there's a silly story involved. And I think, you know, one of the things, once people look at my bio and they said, oh, you've hiked 20 different wilderness long trails and you had the speed record, like, how can I ever relate? And from the very beginning, my trail name is about one of the lessons that I've learned along the way and learned the hard way. And I think we all learn lessons the hard way. And part of my goal is to make that learning hard way a little bit easier for other folks. But when I started the Appalachian Trail, I actually didn't have a sleeping bag, which I would not advise. I quickly, luckily there's a gear store about 30 miles in, and I quickly learned, okay, I need to get a sleeping bag and get going. But about 500 miles into the Appalachian Trail, I noticed my bag was looking all deflated and sad. And I said, was talking to a person at a gear store. And I said, what gives? They said they would last 10 years. It was really expensive, as you know, sleeping bags can be. And he said, hey, did you get it wet at all? I said, nope. And then we realized, he said, are you sticking? I said, I'd stick my head in my sleeping bag to keep my face warm. And he said, oh, your breath is condensing the moisture from my breath. You need to snorkel to stick up out the top. So that's how I became Snorkel.
Yeah, so it's sounding already like your book is based on experience, the failures, learning from your failures, which is important. This isn't somebody that just says, hey, this is how to do it. And now this is real life experience and learning things the hard way sometimes. So I've done that myself, by the way, especially on winter hikes. You're not supposed to do that, but my face would get cold and I'd pull it over.
Exactly. I've come up with some better methods over the years, but if no one tells you when you first are getting started, you don't know.
Yeah, that's right. And that's why we need books like yours. I had to ask you that question. I'm sure you've been asked it 100 times or 1,000 times, but everybody wants to hear the story behind trail names because there's usually an interesting story there. So at what age did you start these outdoor adventures? Did you just say, hey, I'm going to start through hiking these long distance trails? Or is this something you started at a young age?
That my desire to do a long trail is definitely something that came to me as an adult. But I think building a love for being outdoors, whether that means sitting under a tree in the park or going for a stroll in a nature area is something that I didn't really realize how important it would be in my life until I was looking back on it. Someone was asking me a question about it a few years ago. And I was like, oh yeah, being a kid and loving the outdoors was so important. And my family isn't super outdoorsy, but I had a first grade teacher who took us on a field trip to a little nature area, that has like maybe 3 miles of trails and a lot of its invasive species. And I didn't care. I just thought it was the coolest thing in the world. And that's really what got me excited about wanting to be outside. And it wasn't until I was an adult that I realized, oh yeah, that was really fun. Maybe I should do some more of that. I loved doing that as a kid. And it just kind of snowballed into long distance hiking.
Yeah, I interviewed a teacher about a week ago. No, it's been almost 2 weeks now. And she had talked about her students really having an interest in her outdoor experiences. And I've interviewed other people, and it's amazing how many people were influenced by teachers at even a very young age to pursue these interests. Sometimes years go by, right? You may not be till you're an adult and you say, hey, you know, I did this in the fourth or fifth grade and it was a lot of fun. Yeah. I'm going to go out and do it again. But for all you teachers out there listening, you do make a difference.
Yeah, for sure. And, I loved going to that nature area so much that I had my third grade birthday party there. In fact, I invited everyone in the class and, what's the best time to see wildlife? Went to see the deer and the turkeys at 5:30 in the morning. And guess what? Some kids actually showed up.
Wow. So what influenced you to go out on your first long distance hike, your first through hike?
Yeah. So, as I started getting more and more into day hiking and bigger hiking and going to the tops of peaks, I would occasionally cross signs for the Pacific Crest Trail, because it's up on the crest. And if you want to go to a peak, you usually use it as an access point. And that's around the time when I saw that sign that said Mexico that way, Canada that way. And I said, holy moly, there's something that goes the whole way and I could hike it. And I started talking with some friends, other hiking partners who, had done, a couple nights on it. I was thinking, this is something I'd really like to do. And it just so happened, the Appalachian Trail, you can start a little bit earlier in the season and a lot of people can do it a little bit faster than the PCT. So I ended up deciding to do that as my first long distance hike instead. But I think that, there's a big like light bulb going on in my head when I saw that sign and thought, I started thinking like, hey, maybe this is something that I would enjoy doing.
It's contagious once you get out there and start doing it. I was a scout leader for years, and after leaving scouts, my wife agreed to let me go out and do multi-week hikes in my spare time. And through that, I started out doing the long trail in Vermont, and since then, I've done some section hikes on the Appalachian Trail. I live out on the East Coast, and you just feel like you can't get enough of it.
Yeah.
And I told my wife, I said, be careful. Like, if I talk to enough people to through hike these long distance trails, because she dangled that carrot in front of me a couple of years ago and I talked myself out of it. She was going to agree to let me do the Appalachian Trail. But I said, it's going to end up happening.
Yeah, it's so true. And, I don't have the time in my life right now to do these 6 month hikes anymore. But, it's something my 2 weeks or my month or whatever I can get in my week, my long weekend, my short weekend, my 2 hours after work. I'm always thinking about it. And it's always, what's the next trip? I'm so excited to go out.
So you said you looked at the PCT first and the AT. At that point, were you thinking, I'm going to do all three of the big trails, I'm going to do the big three, or was it more like, I'm going to do the AT, and then you came back and said, you know, I'm going to go to the next one and see how I do there?
You know, I think it was a little bit more like I said, okay, I'm going to do the AT. I hadn't even heard of the Continental Divide Trail, I think, until I was like partway through the PCT and I met someone who had hiked it before. So that really wasn't on my radar at all.
We'll be back after a quick break.
You ever think about what might be in the water you're drinking every time you fill up your water bottles while you're in the outdoors? I try not to, and I really don't, because I use Sawyer water filters. Sawyer filter technology, because of their high standards, every filter is individually tested 3 times through the process. I've been using their permethrin product for years now to protect me from, well, quite frankly, ticks, and the picaridin to keep the flies at bay. Don't let bad water, insects, or a tick bite cut your trip short or even ruin it. Use Sawyer products. Go to your local outdoor retailer and ask for Sawyer products, whether it's a water filter, insect repellent. They're likely to have it. You can also go to Sawyer's website and read more about these incredible, high-quality products that they offer those of us who enjoy the outdoors.
Yep, that's a tough trail. I mean, that's, from what I understand, there's navigation is a very difficult part of that. It's not exactly the best marked
trail. Yeah, and I know that since I've hiked it, so I hiked the CDT in 2010, and since I've hiked it, the trail organization, the Continental Divide Trail Coalition, who I actually worked for a few years, has really starting to invest in putting signs and getting it marked, because, you know, the CDT has a reputation as that, and it is a national scenic trail. So their thought is, hey, these other trails are pretty well marked. Maybe that's something we want to do to keep up with their standard.
Yeah, that, and I think the idea of becoming a triple crowner is becoming more popular. I think 10 years ago, it was very unusual to meet or talk to somebody that was triple crowner. Not that there's a lot of them out there now, but it's becoming more of something that people are attempting to do.
Yeah, I was vice president of the American Long Distance Hiking Association West, which is the West Coast sister organization of the Appalachian Long Distance Hikers Association. And our organization gives out the Triple Crown. And when I started, probably until maybe 2016 or 2017, when we sent our little letter with your plaque that you get when you get a Triple Crown, we said there are fewer people who have been in who are Triple Crowners than have been in outer space. And I think that number is, finally, there's more Triple Crowners than people who have been in space. Although, I don't know, with SpaceX and all that, maybe those numbers are going to be dancing around each other for a while.
I don't know, with this increase in hiking, people going in the outdoors, I'm not so sure.
We'll have to keep tracking of these two.
Yes. The space race exactly. And the Triple Crown race, see who wins here. Now, there's been a notable increase in the number of female hikers that have been going over maybe the last 5 to 10 years. Do you have any personal thoughts or observations that would explain that happening? Because I think it's a great thing. I mean, part of what I like to talk about here is just, you know, breaking down barriers, doors, and getting everybody out there to enjoy this. But we have seen an increase in female.
Yeah. Hikers. I mean, I think it's a great thing. When I first hiked the AT, especially for women who are hiking solo, like I started the trail, there were, I don't know, it was like 1 in 10. Maybe a quarter of the hikers were women. There really were not that many. And now when I'm out on a section of the PCT, it almost seems like it's half and half. And I think, you know, part of it has really been seeing role models, seeing women like Jennifer Farr Davis or Heather Anderson, just, you know, like not only hiking, but, you know, being faster than male hikers, just really going solo into really wild places and really difficult trails. And I think being able to see them makes it a little bit easier for people saying, like, for women saying, like, hey, you know, like, they're doing these things, I can do it too.
Yeah, that's the power of a role model or an example. Somebody, a young woman can, or any woman can look at that and say, hey, you know what? I think I can do that. Maybe I'm not as fast as that hiker, but I'm in good shape. I think I can do that. I had a female hiker tell me recently that she believes that women are now getting to the point where they're looking at this and saying, I'm not in any more danger than any man when I'm out there on the trail. I can handle myself. I could, you know, I'm capable of keeping myself safe just as well as any man.
Yeah, I can see that. And, you know, one of the things that I tell everyone, you know, I coach some people who are about to head off hiking is, you know, if your family's worried and, you know, that's fair. I have men in their 60s and 70s who say, hey, my family's really worried about me going out. You know, if you look at statistics of crime rates, the trail is being outdoors is way, way safer than crime rates in a city, for example. So if you're not going to have a problem with someone traveling to a city, then, you know, I think you're going to be totally fine on a trail.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, when it was put to me the way that this woman did, I said, wow, that makes a lot of sense that, you know, women are more and more women are getting to that point where they're just realizing, we don't have to be afraid of anything. And you're right. You know, you look at it as a probability equation and yeah, you're more likely to be a victim of a crime, male or female, on your way to the trail, traveling through an airport or a city, yeah, than you are.
And I do think technology helps too. It's a little bit easier to check in with folks back home, be like, all right, I made it to my town. I'm totally fine. And I think there truly is something to that.
Yeah, I know with my own multi-week hikes, the idea that I can send my wife a message every night, send her some photos, goes a long way. And I can't imagine years ago, you just kind of headed out there. And when you were able to get into town and get to a payphone, you can call in and say, hey, I'm okay. But sometimes you may be going weeks without hearing from your loved one or be able to be in touch with
them. Right, right. And, you know, I think about when I first started doing these long trails, going without a cell phone you know, my parents, I don't know how they slept at night. The older I get, the more I appreciate with all the, like many people, the older I appreciate what my parents put up with when I was younger.
Yeah. My boys are all grown up now, but it reminds me of a story when my oldest son went to high school and I just turned to my wife when he wasn't in the room and I said, all the things I did in high school hasn't scared me about what he might end up doing.
That's great.
Yeah, so yeah, we get payback what we get when we're young. So I have to ask this question. It's another one of those questions that if I don't ask it, my friends and some of the listeners will be emailing me, why didn't you ask this? Do you have any interesting animal encounters?
Oh,
while you're out,
yeah. I just got asked about this the other day about bears. But, you know, my most interesting animal encounter was on the Pacific Northwest Trail. And I was hiking with a good friend of mine and my business partner at Treeline Review, Naomi Huditz. And we were on this road walk section of the Pacific Northwest Trail, you know, kind of cruising, not super paying attention because it's a road. There's no navigation. And I see this I'm a little bit ahead of her. I see this little kitten go across the trail. And, you know, it's kind of sad. Some road walking sections, especially if they're closer to town, folks will go out to the edge of town on a road and dump a litter of kittens they don't want anymore. And it's pretty sad. But Naomi loves cats. So I said, hey, Naomi, come up. There's a little cat on the trail. We look over to the side of the trail, side of the road. It's crossed down this embankment. And we're looking and I say, oh, look, there's a kitten. And right behind the kitten, big mama mountain lion. And that was not a normal kitten. That was a mountain lion cub. So we look at the two of those cats, take out our bear spray and very slowly back away. And we know mama's just looking at us being like, don't come close to my baby. So that was probably my most memorable animal encounter.
Yeah, I've seen bears from a distance hiking here in the Northeast. Nothing close enough to make me nervous, but seeing a big cat out there, that they move a lot faster. I mean, bears move fast enough, right? But a cat, that's a different story. And wow, that's pretty scary. And being around one of their cubs, as everybody should know, that can create a really dangerous situation. I can imagine.
Yeah, that was pretty. That's the one that got my heart beat the most. I've had some close calls with bears over the years, but a cat. You know, the thing about cat sightings is they're so rare and you know they're watching you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been looking at hiking the Tahoe Rim Trail.
I love that one.
And if somebody told me, oh, they're out there, they know you're out there. You might not see them, but they know you're there. Yeah.
Oh yeah, they're watching. But you know, I kind of prefer it that way. You know, it's kind of like you're there. What I don't see, I don't need to know about.
Well, exactly. I remember my first bear sighting while hiking, and I remember sitting in a tent, and every noise I heard that night sounded like a bear. It could have been a mouse running across some leaves, but you know, after seeing a bear that afternoon and laying in my tent, everything sounded like it was as big as a bear.
And you know, that still happens to me. And I have people say, oh, you must not worry about any of these animals. And I think, you know, to some extent it's human. It, you know, if you see a bear, you're going to be thinking about it for the next few hours. And you're going to be telling your friends about it. You know, it's going to be on your mind. So I think no matter how much you hike, it's reacting to an animal encounter is very normal.
Right. I think it's part of our primitive instincts, maybe, is that, you know, to know that, okay, we actually have seen it now and we have verified that there's a bear here. We know they're here, but now we have verified it. So
exactly.
Now on the trail, I know, with my own experiences and speaking with through hikers, there's good and bad days out there. Any of those days where you just said, hey, why am I doing this? Or, you know, I think I'm just going to quit today. I'm going to go home. I've walked far.
Yeah. Enough. You know, so I've hiked, I don't know, what am I up to? More than 20 of these long distance wilderness trails and 14 through hikes in cities. But I tell people I've quit 3 trails. You know, I think for me, the thing about quitting is, you should never, I'm sure you've heard this from other people, but never quit on a bad day. You know, if you're not feeling it, go into town and get a room, put up your feet and really think about like, what is it that's making me not feel like I'm into this? And you know, sometimes it's the weather. Sometimes after a really bad day of walking through the rain and being cold, and thinking this isn't fun. You know, once you warm up and get some food in your belly and dry off, you start thinking about it and you're like, you know what? That was actually pretty wild what I just went through. I can't wait to have another experience like that so I can tell all my friends about, you know, there's something funny about how the human mind works is you could go through this really miserable day. And then as soon as you're warm and eating food, and it's looking at it in the rear window, it actually kind of turns into a funny thing. So that's kind of been my way mostly of dealing with these thoughts, this inner narrative of like, I'm not having fun, I want to quit, is, you know, like get yourself into a safe situation in town or in your tent and, you know, kind of reassess, figure out what you can do to make it better.
Yeah, sometimes just taking a day off in town and unwinding and recharging could be enough. And I went through this in 2017. After having knee surgery a year later, went out and hiked the long trail and twisted up my knee and got, you know, kind of spooked me a little bit. So I went home, but you know, I don't think I was 10 miles out of the parking lot. And I was thinking, you know, I'm feeling better now.
It's so, that's another thing that's so human is like, once you're headed home, you're like, oh, you know what? Maybe I could keep doing it. But yeah, I think when it comes to injury too, it's like a lot of these injuries, if you keep hiking on them, they could really become chronic. So that's one part of quitting where I really I really try to be careful because, you know, part of through hiking is mental and part of it's physical. And, you know, if you mess with the physical, it could have lasting implications for years down the line. So that's one part of quitting where you really just want to be careful.
So now I'd like to talk about the record you held for the women's speed record. This was an unsupported record, which means you did this without people meeting you at trailheads and supplying. You had packed up and hiked start to finish. And for a period from 2011 to 2015, was it that you held the speed record for the Appalachian
Trail? And actually, you know, someone messaged me a few months back saying, hey, I think you still have the northbound record. Because Heather Anderson got the southbound record in 2015. But yeah, you know, I tell people about that speed hike is, you know, I in many ways, and you know, once again, this is the 2020 hindsight. Well, that has a different meaning these days, but you know, looking back, you know, every day on that trail was really, really magical to me, even though I was putting in big miles and long days and my feet hurt. You know, I felt like because I had this mission of getting this record that every day I woke up, not just with a purpose of finishing, but trying to do show up as my absolute best. And, you know, that I can't do that every day, but, you know, having had that experience, I think is something I've been able to tap into even when I'm not hiking.
How do you prepare for doing this fastest known time? I'm guessing you set out to do it. I mean, you didn't just like start on your first hike with your, you know, having to replace a sleeping bag and break the record. Right? I'm sure it wasn't on that
one. I've been lucky and fortunate enough to hike the Appalachian Trail twice. And, you know, part of the inspiration for it was I had hiked the Pacific Crest Trail and the Continental Divide Trail. And as we talked about earlier, the Continental Divide Trail was a really hard trail. And, you know, I kept thinking while I was hiking the CDT of the beauty of the Appalachian Trail and the green trees and the water and, you know, how the trail, you can always see where it is, which is not the case in the Continental Divide, how it's signed and has shelters. And, you know, I really started kind of like fantasizing about hiking the AT. And my goal for the AT, I didn't quite have a goal of setting the speed record, but I had a goal of a certain amount of miles I wanted to do per day. And I had a goal for kind of the spirit with which I wanted to hike it. And, you know, but the spirit with which I wanted to hike is I didn't want to have regrets. I didn't want to feel like I was unsafe because I felt like a lot of the times on the CDT, you know, like being above tree line during lightning storms, things like that felt kind of unsafe. So I really wanted to hike in a way that was true to myself. And being true to myself was giving it my all.
How many miles a day were you averaging during this attempt?
Yeah, I set out with a goal of 25 a day, and I think it ended up being something more like around 28 per day.
Mm-hmm. Did you do any special training, or were you already in through hiker mode physically to go out when you attempted this?
So I did a few things. I hiked the CDT finished hiking the CDT, I'd say about, 5 months is a gap. It's definitely a gap to get out of through hiking shape. But I did do a little bit of training for it. I spent several months kind of upping my exercise routine, putting in more hours and more miles. And then something that really helped me was hiking the Benton McKay Trail right before the AT. And for those who haven't had the chance to hike the Benton McKay, have you hiked the Benton McKay?
No, it's on my bucket list, though.
I love that trail. You know, the Benton McKay to me felt a little bit like if you took the AT and took the CDT and they had a kid together. You know, there was a lot of the wildness of the CDT and like having to pay attention to your maps, but more like the AT landscape was so much fun. And it was, you know, I did a much more relaxed mileage. I kind of got back my head into the trails game. I was like mentally back in the trail game. So I think that, and you know, my body was acclimating to temperatures and all that stuff, which can be a shock when starting a through hike too. So I think that really helped prepare.
Mm-hmm. Now, when doing this, was there anything you changed in terms of your resupply strategy? Or was it just the basic, okay, I'm going to go into town and whatever method you use, whether it's mail, shipping through the mail or going to the grocery store, was there anything you did differently in terms of resupply
I think, you know, part of it was changing my diet to be healthier. Cause I knew that the Pop-Tarts and Snickers diet wasn't going to fly. Like I needed to be feeding my body some like, you know, high end fuel. So I was definitely spending a lot more money on the food that I was eating on that trail because of it. And being a lot more mindful about what I was eating. So I'd say that was one of the things that was a big change compared to the first time I hiked the AT.
Right. Yeah. More attention to nutrition and less attention to just
eating whatever I want,
shoving sugar bombs in you and getting up
exactly.
In the morning and going, right? I always find it amazing. You know, I'll get into camp because a lot of times I'm hiking with somewhere in the AT bubble when I'm doing my section hikes, and I'll see people with their very expensive gear and well-trained athletes, and they're bragging about how little they spent at the dollar store on their food.
That's so true.
I had a nutritionist on a few months ago, and we were laughing about that. You know, she's like, because that's what she works on. She goes, yeah, that's a big problem is that, you'll pay a lot of attention making sure you have the proper gear, but you don't even care what you're eating. It's almost like a badge of honor if you only spent $10 on a week's worth of food.
Yeah, I feel like I got that out of my system relatively early. And I mean, I can feel the difference when I'm spending more on my food and eating stuff that's better for my body. So I end up doing that trade-off.
I want to talk about your book, Long Trails, Mastering the Art of the Thru Hike. It's been referenced as the Bible of the sport, or soon to be Bible of the sport. You wrote this book 2017. You were honored with an award for it. Tell us a little bit about the book.
Yeah, so, when I was first asked by Backpacker and Falcon Guides to write this book, I was looking kind of some of the other books that were out there and realized that there were only, at that time, about two books out there on how to thru hike. And both of them were written by these super, super athletes who had done things no one else had ever done. And I really wanted to make a book that was relatable to people who, maybe even hadn't committed to thru hiking, but were just curious about it and wanted to learn more. So one of the things, one of the subtext of it is from dream to reality. I think it says that on the back of the book. And I really wanted someone who had first heard about the Appalachian Trail, first heard about the Pacific Crest Trail or the John Muir Trail or Long Trail and said, hey, that sounds kind of cool. I wonder what's involved in doing it. To be able to pick up the book and start at the very beginning, answering questions like, how much does this cost? But also answering questions that I had never seen a book or heard these like so-called experts talk about, like, how do I tell my family I'm going to go? Like, what do I do about my kids or my dog or subletting my house? A lot of these like logistics that can stop people before they even step their first foot on a trail. And I also wanted to have the book not just be snorkel's the expert, here's the snorkel way of doing things, which in some ways felt very much so like the other books out there, and really be it kind of this this shared storytelling of lots of different people from different walks of life, different ages, different abilities, all sharing their stories. So throughout the entire book, I have, here's what I did, but then, there'll be an opposite page being like, all right, here's what Pi did, going from computer programmer who ate at McDonald's every day to starting the Appalachian Trail. Or here's what Dean did, going from quitting his job and or retiring from his job and starting his first long trail at the age of 65. So, even if you don't identify with snorkel, there's going to be someone in the book who you're like, oh, that's like me.
Yeah, and I think that's so important with these books, right? If you pick it up and it reads like a textbook, It can be intimidating. It's like, okay, well, this person's a professional writer, professional hiker. But then you hear real life stories and you could sit there and say, okay, they made some mistakes or they lived the kind of life I'm living. And you feel inspired. You feel like, yes, I can do this. And it sounds like, your book does that. I mean, it's more than just, like I said, it's not a how-to book, but maybe a book to inspire people to say, you can do this and here's a way to help you do it.
Yeah. I mean, that was my goal, is to really have people feel like, hey, there are people just like me out here doing it. Here's some mistakes they've made and here are some ways to avoid those mistakes. Here's some things to think about because, I think you know this too, is that, there's the questions that before you set out, that to ask before you set out. And then there's questions you don't even know to know until you've done it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's the thing. Maybe it's me personally, but I just think that when I hear experienced people have made mistakes, I feel like, oh, okay, so I'm not an idiot. It's like I've told people, you can find very experienced hikers. I've been doing this for since I was 7 years old. Right? At some point, you're going to make a wrong turn. You're going to miss a trail marker. Or you're going to forget to bring a piece of gear. And so, but you learn from your mistakes, other people's mistakes, but understand mistakes happen.
Yeah, mistakes do happen. And, in some ways it's like, okay, I know I've forgotten a spork before, my spoon before, but I know I can use a credit card to scoop up my food. You know, like a lot of it's like, okay, so being experienced means knowing the backup for when you make a mistake.
Well, I used to tell kids when I was a scout leader that those were the, best stories,
right?
You know? And I'm like, quick scout story, you know, it was an 11-year-old. It was his turn to cook for the first time on a camp out. He was going to make fettuccine Alfredo, something like that. But he forgot everything but the Alfredo sauce. He had all they had was a jar of Alfredo sauce. This poor kid looked like he was going to cry. And I just took him aside and said, look, this is going to make a great story when you become an Eagle Scout. Don't worry about it. We'll get you through this.
Oh, that's so good.
You also have a website where you do coaching and you have a Thru Hiker 101 course.
Yeah. So I'll first talk about the Thru Hiking 101 course, which is through Backpacker Magazine. And it's a 6-week online course that we developed that has everything from videos, quizzes. Don't worry, you're not graded. The quizzes are more like, hey, you know, like what's the best trail for you? That sort of thing. You know, there's all sorts of worksheets, food planning checklists, gear checklists. So it's really designed to almost be an extension of the book to take this idea of going from dream to reality, all those things that you need to think about when you head off on a long hike, whichever trail or however long you plan to be out. And the one-on-one coaching is for folks who have very specific questions, who just enjoy, you know, some people learn better when they're talking one-on-one to people as opposed to a book. And I certainly know I'm one of those people. So that's also an option that I have available for folks who are thinking about a trip and just want to brainstorm and get some of their questions answered.
Would you call your book a companion to the hiking one-on-one course?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, some people, a lot of times picking up a book is a little bit easier than taking a course, depending on how much time you have. So I would say both of them are really great resources for folks who are either looking to through hike, know they're going to through hike, have through hiked before, and are looking to get some more skills, and definitely for section hikers as well.
And while we're still on the topic of the book here, how can people get a hold of your book?
Publisher is Falcon Guides, and you can get it. I always tell people to go check their local bookstore, and if their local bookstore doesn't have it, to ask for it. But you can also get it, of course, on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And I think some REIs have it as well. And if your REI doesn't have it, or your local gear store doesn't have it, ask for it. Yeah, I would say those are the best places to. Oh, and also if you want a signed copy, you can email me or message me on Facebook or Instagram, and I can send you a signed copy.
Okay, and we're going to have links to all that in the description for anybody who's interested. And your website, we'll put, you know, there'll be a link to the website, but you want to let us know what
that is? Yeah, so my website is www.eathomas.com. Those are my initials, Elizabeth A. Thomas. It looks a little bit like E. Thomas. And if you just Google Liz Thomas hiking, it'll come up as well. And then my Facebook and Instagram are just at Liz Thomas hiking.
Now, Liz, as we spoke at the beginning here, you're a very busy person. You're involved in a lot of things in the hiking community. So now let's talk about Treeline.
Yeah. So Treeline Review actually kind of started a little bit as an extension of chapter 5 in Long Trails, my book, you know, because like a lot of people have told me that the part of the book that they find the most fascinating and the most helpful is the gear section. And, you know, I purposely kind of buried it at section 5, you know, chapter 5 on the book, because I really want people to think about, people get so into gear, and I really wanted people to think about all the other things that can impact a hike, you know, skills that you could know, because there are people who hike the trail, you know, with all sorts of, you know, old gear or falling apart gear, and they've made it because they've had the skills. But people love gear, and I also love gear as well. So Treeline Review is really set up to take that same spirit of talking about gear and talking about what gear is best. And one of the coolest things about Treeline Review is it started with a thru hiking focus, but I've been able to recruit some really, really great writers from all sorts of sports, from climbing and mountain biking, paddling, rafting, skiing. So it's really been a cool way to get people to, you know, really see themselves outdoors, whatever their sports are.
I'm a bit of a gear junkie myself.
I think we can't help ourselves.
You see some, you know, stoves are my, I've got four or five different backpacking stoves from the, you know, alcohol stove I made myself, the butane stoves. Any advice to the newbie backpacker, maybe not even a through hiker, but somebody that's looking to go out and do, to get started with one or two night trips with gear, because that could be intimidating. If you go out and search gear, it could add up quickly, or you can do it on a budget. Any advice for somebody gear wise? It's
for sure. You know, I always tell people, especially if you're on a budget, you know, go rent some gear or see if you can borrow it from a friend before you buy it, because that'll really give you an idea of like, oh, I really, really liked the igniter on my friend's backpacking stove. Maybe I'll look when I buy one, I'll get a backpacking stove with an igniter. Or, oh, I really didn't like how that hood fit on my friend's mommy bag. I've got to look for a sleeping bag that has a different hood. So it'll kind of just give you enough of an idea and familiarity with the category in general to get an idea of what you like and what you don't like before you go off and buy one. And then the other suggestion at Treeline Review, we always for like, so there'll be a category like best sleeping bags for backpacking or best sleeping pads for backpacking. And we have these different categories. And one of them is the best budget, which is kind of a bang for your buck. You know, that it's going to be less expensive than some of the other ones we recommend, but it's going to be one that's going to be a solid one that'll last you a long time, that is not going to feel like it was the Walmart special. And I think, you know, there's a lot of really high quality budget gear out there as well. You just have to know where to look and to do your research. So that would be my suggestion. And my last suggestion is to look for some used gear as well. And REI, actually, we often have links to products that we recommend in the used section because of that.
Yeah, I think dollar for dollar, there's been a lot of advances, specifically when it comes to synthetic sleeping bags, that they're making them smaller and lighter than they did five or 10 years ago. I use a down bag, and I've tried, you know, I have a smaller pack, and I've sometimes tell people, you know, I could do this because I have a down bag, but I've been doing this a long time. So I'm at the point where I'll invest the money in a good down sleeping bag. But if you're not there yet, you can buy a quality entry level synthetic bag that will do the job.
And it's amazing. As you said, compared to 10 years ago, the quality of the synthetic bags has really increased.
Yeah. So any advice for female through hikers? You know, we talked about, you know, some of the fears and, you know, the increase in through hikers, female hikers over the past few years. But do you have any advice specifically for women that enjoy hiking at this point, but are kind of saying, hey, I'm not sure I can do that or not?
Yeah. One thing I would say is, you know, this is true for anyone who's going off on a hike and might have some fears. You know, the more knowledge is power. So the more you know, the more you read up, the more you talk to other people who've done it before, the more empowered you'll feel going out there. And if something comes up, you will have the skills and knowledge to know how to react. And the more that knowledge and those skills can become automatic, the better. So, you know, I tell all hikers, for example, you know, try to take a wilderness first aid class before you go out. Because that's really going to help you help address a lot of those fears about like, hey, what if I get injured out there? And I'd say the same thing too goes for, you know, maybe taking a self-defense class if that's something that you're concerned about. So I would say skills and knowledge are really, really powerful in addressing fears before you head off.
Yeah, just knowledge can offset a lot of fear. I agree with you. And just having some basic wilderness first aid skills, I know for myself, goes a long way. It may not be you're using them. It could be a fellow hiker, but it's good if we're all doing that. If we're all going to be out there to know that everybody's staying sharp with those skills.
And I think, you know, those classes also make you mindful of things that can happen. And so it kind of like helps you prevent something bad happening several steps before it gets to that point.
Now you're into urban hiking. And I see that you've been involved from Los Angeles to New York City, Seattle. Maybe give us a little background.
So, what is urban hiking? Urban through hiking. The Irvine Thru Hiking came about pretty much on a dare. Someone cold emailed me through my website and said, hey, I came up with a route in Los Angeles that has very similar distance and elevation gain to the John Muir Trail, you know, which is this famous trail that goes through the Sierra. But it's all within the city. Do you want to come out and hike it? And I thought, well, you know, I live in Colorado. It's the winter right now. I'm not really into skiing. I can't go out and backpack in the high country. Sure. LA sounds warm. So I went out and just absolutely had a blast, and it was challenging, and I learned so much, and I saw new things, and I met new people, and so many of the things that I love about thru hiking, I realized I could experience while in the city, and it kind of put me on this huge kick to go explore other cities in the same way.
Yeah, my experience with hiking is you don't know a place yes. until you've walked through it, right? And you know from, you know, I can relate to this with the Appalachian Trail, right? Some of the small towns you walk through. You know, growing up in the Northeast, I had driven through some of these areas, but I really felt after walking them, you really get to know the area. You really get to enjoy it and appreciate it.
I agree with that. And, you know, some cities, you know, I've gone to visit cities in a more traditional way, you know, with a car or whatever. And I'm like, you know what? It's so much more fun on foot. And, you know, New York, I considered myself a New Yorkophobe for at least a decade. I used to live fairly close there, and friends would go into New York for the weekend and be like, no way, that place is scary. And going there by foot, not having to hop in a train every day and be in the bustle of the crowded stations, I was like, oh, this is a city just like other cities. And had so much fun. So I think a lot of the times the intimidating things of being in a city when you're there by foot, you see it in a different light.
Next, I grew up across the river from New York City, and I just remember even as a kid going over there and just walking and looking up at the big buildings. And as I got older, looking around and saying, wow, so much yeah. happens here, you know, being down near Wall Street and saying, wow, this is like the commerce capital of the world. You know, the economics of the world revolves around what goes on here. And you go to a place like Washington, D.C., and you pass these monuments and these government office buildings, and you drive by them, you just kind of go, okay, well, there's the Washington right. Monument. Okay, there's the White House. But when you're walking it, right, you have time to think about it, you know, I think to really take it all in and put it into perspective.
Yeah, I love that idea of when you're walking, you have time to think about it. And that's true yeah. in the backcountry and in the city.
Yeah, yeah. Because, well, my own experience, another experience of mine is I'd gone to Gettysburg as a kid, and we had done the bus tour of Gettysburg. Well, I took my kids there. We went there with the Boy Scouts, and we did the walking tour over. It was over 3 days. We had walked different parts of Gettysburg, and it was just a totally different experience. Now, this may be strained from urban through hiking, but just, again, sharing another experience. Walking through that yeah. battlefield and actually being able to stop and read the monuments or stop at these certain places like where Pickett's Charge was, it really adds
yeah,
to the experience.
And, you know, one thing I've noticed too is hikers tend to think about things very spatially as viewed by foot. Maybe all people do. And, you know, when I visited Gettysburg, I visited by car, but I imagine I didn't have the time for it, but I thought, you know, I really wish I could just walk around this place for a few days and experience it like people who were there would have experienced it on foot. And, you know, I just knowing myself, I just think that experience would, you know, leave me bawling in tears because it would be so much more powerful by foot.
Right. Standing there and said, this is where Abraham Lincoln gave the Gettysburg Address. Yeah. Looking and said, you know, and you just said, wow, you know, I'm standing here looking at that, you know, and it's, yeah, it's a different experience. It's hard to describe, but it's a unique experience when you're doing it by foot rather
yeah,
than just driving.
The trip was so lucky sure. to be able to experience it by foot.
Yeah, our kids loved it. And it wasn't easy. It was 10 miles one day, I think 5 another day. So for some of our younger kids, it was a bit difficult, but it was a trip that we did every other year, and it was a big deal. Everybody loved yeah. the Gettysburg trip. So what do you have coming up? Liz, any personal goals? Any bucket
yeah,
list
I've
items?
Got a few things. So I would say, you know, Tree Line Review, we have a goal of getting several gear stories up every week. So that keeps me pretty busy. And, you know, I think it's so important for people to have access to quality gear reviews. So that's something that's really important to me on sort of like the gear and the writing side. As far as hikes go, there's a few things that I've been working on. One of them is, you know, there's a lot of people who talk about the 52 hike challenge. And I think among thru hikers or distance hikers, there can sometimes be some snobbery about going on day hikes. And, you know, some of it's snobbery and some of it's, you know, like once you've been on a thru hike, the idea of having to drive 2 hours for a hike that takes a couple hours, you know, your driving to hike ratio isn't, you know, when you're on a thru hike, you roll out of bed and start walking. So one of my goals has been to really explore my local area by going on day hikes and going to 52 hikes over the year that are totally new to me or that I haven't done before.
Yeah, that 52 hike challenge is pretty cool. You know, I've been doing that and it's motivational. I think that those type of things, yeah, you're looking at it saying, oh, okay, I've got to stay caught. I got to catch up. You know, I had a couple weeks off or, you know, I think that's very motivational. And, you know, I mean, we have my friends and I that hike, we have an unwritten rule of we try not to drive more than we have to hike.
You know, if
we drive, right. That's kind of like the threshold, you know, we don't want to do more driving than hiking. We try to.
And yeah, you know, about the 52 hike challenge too, is that, you know, I try not to, some people do it where they're like, oh, only hikes over 7 miles count. And for me, I've just been like, you know, any place that's new to me counts because that's going to change my worldview. It's going to change my mental map of what's within a 2 hour drive of me. And it'll take me a new place outdoors. And, you know, that's the thing about hiking is like long hikes are great. Multi-month hikes are great, but I still, to this day, if I'm having a bad day at work or, you know, someone's mean to me at a grocery store, you know, even an hour long hike, it's amazing how much better I feel.
Yeah. Yeah. Nobody's going to be out on a day hike.
Exactly.
I was at work. I miss being in the office. Now, I don't want to sound like I'm jumping around here, but I just back on the topic of gear and gear reviews. I just wanted to touch on that again because it's just kind of popped into my head with newbies and gear, trying to find the right gear. And you talked again about borrowing gear. That's always something I try to advise people on, right? Is because, you know, we don't always have the same preferences. And like people, when they ask me, but the toughest questions I'm always asked, what kind of shoes should I get? What kind of boots should I get? Right? Yep. Because our feet are all different. Right. So what's working for me, probably not going to work for maybe the same size foot, but may not work. Or, and the same thing goes for, I think, a lot of our gear. So, I mean, the gear reviews are good and they're helpful, but I think you alluded to this that, you know, try it out and see what works best for you.
Yeah. And, you know, knowing yourself, knowing your preferences, knowing how and where you're going to use it matters so much in finding the right thing for you because, you know, what's best for your friend might not be best for you because you'll be using it in a totally different way.
Right, 'cause I did a kind of tongue-in-cheek episode on gear reviews a while back. And my point was, you know, we know what the best gear is for us, right? And that information's helpful. It's useful. It's a tool to lead us towards buying quality gear and keep us away from buying garbage. But nothing is better than you trying it out. You try that backpack on and see how it fits you. You know, set up that tent and see if you're comfortable with the way that tent sets up.
And, you know, one of my other pieces of advice is, you know, going someplace where if you buy it and you set it up in your backyard and you're like, I can't see myself doing this every night. This is too complicated. They have a good return policy.
Yeah. No, I've done that. I've bought tents, set them up in the yard and, you know, keep it up for an hour or two, take it down, put it back up and say, I don't know that I'd want to be putting this up in the rain. That's usually the biggest thing with me. I'll say, you know, this could be a lot of work in the rain.
Yeah. I think that, you know, knowing yourself, knowing the gear and knowing yourself and how you're going to play together is so important.
But that same tent, somebody else might not have a problem with setting it up if the rain might not even care, but me personally. And that's why, you know, it's those gear reviews can steer us, keep us away from junk, But, you know, try the stuff out. Borrowing it is the best way to, might be the
best way. Yeah, you know, a good gear review also will say something like, some people might find that this is annoying to set up in the rain. So, you know, if you know you're going to be hiking someplace where it rains a lot more than other places, maybe this isn't the tent you should go with.
Yeah. Well, at this point, I usually ask for words of encouragement for people listening, but I feel so inspired to do a through hike. It's too late this year, obviously. So I'm going to ask you, what would you tell my wife about letting me through hike? Right now, she's like, that's a long time to go away. Why should she let me go through hiking? Go on a through hike to the Appalachian Trail.
I mean,
I know I'm putting you on the spot, but I need some help here if I'm going to do this, Liz, and I'm hoping you might be that person. I know she's going to listen to this episode.
You know, well, okay, so maybe I would actually direct her towards, you know, several spouses or partners of friends I have who are big-time through hikers. And, you know, like my friend's wife, you know, when he comes back from a through hike, he's so happy and so motivated and so much more pleasant to be around. Not that I'd say.
Oh, I've heard that. I've already gotten that feedback from my multi-week I come back a different person.
You know, I think there's something to be said about, like, it's going to be great for you, but it also might be great for, I mean, I can't speak to the specifics of your relationship, but in many ways it makes things, you know, more pleasant because you've had time to be, you know, time away is a time to be refreshed and come back appreciating each other more. And, you know, at least with my partner, he loves it when I'm gone because he can eat junk food and stay up late and all sorts of things that I kind of frown upon when I'm around normally.
Well, when I do my multi-week hikes, when do you watch the movies I don't like to watch? Eat foods that I would never, ever eat. Maybe I need to tell her, look, you don't have to do it for 2 or 3 weeks. I'll give you 4 or 5 months of that.
Yeah, and you know, maybe that would be a great time for her to take a trip someplace you aren't interested in going. She doesn't have to sit around at home.
That's right. All right, Liz, where do we find you? Where can we find you on social media or
website? I'm on Facebook and Instagram at Liz Thomas Hiking. That's all lowercase and no spaces. And my website is eathomas.com and Tree Line Review is just treelinereview.com and Tree Line Review, at Tree Line Review for Facebook and Instagram. So pretty easy.
And you'll have a piece coming up in Backpacker Magazine. Is it this month or next month?
Yeah, so I'm a contributing editor at Backpacker now, which is really exciting. I've been writing for them for about 7 years now, I think. And let's see. You know, I always get a little bit thrown off on the spacing between when I write something and when it shows up in print. So possibly in the next issue, but I also have a column, Ask a Through Hiker, which you should all submit questions to me because I'm always looking for people to write in and questions to answer. But that goes up on the website about every 2 weeks.
Okay, well, Liz, thank you for giving up your time, being generous with your time here and talking with us on Papa Bear Hikes. There'll be links to your website and we'll find a link so people can find your book. Thanks for sharing all of this with you. Everybody, please go to the website. Very informative. Read her articles in Backpacker Magazine. I've been doing it for years. I can't remember how many years I've been reading them either, Liz, but it feels like it's been a while. I always find them very informative and enjoyable to read. So once again, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, have a great day. Thanks for having me on, Papa Bear.
This episode of Pop Bear Hikes has been brought to you by Avalon Publicity. Avalon Publicity, increasing the digital footprint of content creators and skilled professionals via website development and social media services. For more information about Avalon Publicity, go to their website, avalonbusiness.org. That's avalonbusiness.org.